Saw some water there and drank it. It's a normal thing someone might do if they're thirsty, you know. You're thirsty, there's some water, and you drink it. It just so happened that this water was sanctified by Vedic mantras, and it was meant to be drunk by his wife so that she could give birth to a child. So what happened is the water was so, the mantras were so powerful that he gave birth to a child. Do you believe that, Nrsimha? I hope so, because it's written in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are several important points to be understood from this. One point is here, the power of Vedic mantras. So much power is there. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that there was one Gopal Chakravarti who doubted Haridasa Thakur's statement that by chanting Hare Krishna, you can not only get liberated, you can go beyond that to the stage of pure love of God. Being an impersonalist, Gopal Chakravarti neither had faith in the holy names, nor did he understand that even beyond liberation there is love of Krishna. He thought that liberation is the topmost platform. But Haridasa Thakur said that chanting Hare Krishna brings liberation as anusangik bhava. Means it's a byproduct. It happens automatically. But the real result of chanting Hare Krishna is you get love of God, which is far more valuable than liberation. So liberation is very difficult to achieve. It's not such an easy thing. But it can be easily obtained by chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, chanting Hare Krishna is called Mahamantra. It's the most powerful effect. You see mantras. By mantras, so many things can be done. We see that throughout the Bhagavatam, throughout the Vedic literature, there are descriptions of activities being performed by mantra, which we consider to be, we have no experience of it. It's like Nrsimha is looking very surprised. We say that because the Yuvanashva drank the water, which was meant to be drunk by his wife, so that she would give birth to a child, but he gave birth to a child. So we may doubt this. We don't have any experience. There are so many things mentioned in Bhagavatam throughout the Vedic literatures that someone will shoot an arrow, and from that arrow so many snakes will come, or it will produce a huge firework, or Durvasa Muni, by taking the hair from his head, throwing it on the ground, a big demon will come. But we don't have experience of this, therefore we tend to doubt it. Therefore, if we are less intelligent, we tend to doubt it. But that was the power of mantra, because Durvasa Muni was a powerful brahmana. The brahmanas have a power. Therefore, they can manipulate the material energy by mantra. It's a subtle science. We understand from the Vedic literature that all the material manifestation, of course, everything ultimately comes from Krishna, but it's manifested through the medium of sound. So the Vedic rishis, they were expert in manipulating matter by sound. But to do that, they had to have some shakti, which came from tapasya. Sometimes we see, even in the modern age, some people, they had power to manipulate the material energy. So just like there's some baba, people are very surprised at him, because he can manipulate the material, he has some shakti. He must have done some pious activities in previous life, definitely not in this life. He's only performing impious activities. Even we see Ashwatthama, who's the son of a brahmana. He had some pious credits by which he was able to, he was empowered with potency, by which in a very short time he became like a living thunderbolt, like a living tornado or thunderbolt. And within a very short time he killed thousands and thousands of people who were sleeping. So he must have got the power by some austerities or pious activities performed in a previous life. But in this life, he used it to perform very simple activities. So the point here is that the power that comes from Vedic mantras. Nowadays, people can't do that. Still, people go to brahmanas and ask for blessings, but the blessings of People who have no wealth of austerities, it's meaning it's a brahmana, it has no effect. It said that the wealth of the brahmanas is austerity. By austerity, they gain power. In spiritual life, that's also there. If someone performs austerities, he gains power. It's not a mechanical process, but if one dedicates his activities to Krishna, that austerity, he gives up all the results of his activities to Krishna, then he becomes powerful. Often devotees are asking, well, how can we distribute more books? There's no mechanical formula. But you become empowered by Krishna if you surrender and dedicate yourself. That is the austerity. Dedication means to go on in the heat, in the cold, when people are not responding nicely. By that dedication, by that austerity, Krishna gives empowerment. So the Vedic rishis, they had this power. Sometimes people would ask Srila Prabhupada, they would expect he's a yogi from India, so they would expect he had some power. They would ask to see it. If I was to look at my disciples, this is my power. These are my miracles. They would ask Prabhupada, show some miracle. This is my miracle. I converted meat eaters and drunkards and woman hunters to be pure devotees of Krishna, purely living a pure life and dedicating their life to Krishna. So that in that way, Prabhupada is more than any other Vedic rishis, because they can simply, they can perform some activity which seems wonderful, manipulation of material energy. But Prabhupada has performed an activity which is most wonderful, which is to influence people to become completely uninterested in material energy. So that is his great power. This point could be elaborated more, but another one I'd like to go on to is that you see the king, Yuvanashva, he went into the yajna mandala, the area of the sacrifice, and he drank some water. And as a result, he got an unusual result. So one lesson from this is, when we're in the temple, when we're dealing with Krishna, that which is sacred, we should be very careful. Don't take it lightly. The temple room is a place of Krishna. The whole temple compound is a place of Krishna. So actually the whole universe is Krishna's, but especially this place is specifically designated as the place for worship of Krishna. So all these, everything we should be very careful. You see that they're putting the books on the floor. You shouldn't do that. You may say, well, it's not the floor, it's the mat. But you're putting your feet there. We should be very, very conscious. All these things, how we behave with the devotees, because devotees are also serving Krishna. Bowing down, how we behave in front of the deities. We should be conscious. Sometimes we say devotees just walk in, walk out, and they never even look at the deity. Or they run in. No, you don't. You're not running in the temple. Walk respectfully. Always remember, this is the place of Krishna. So that we should be very careful in any sacred place, particularly when dealing with Vaishnavas. Because we're living with Vaishnavas all the time, we may take it very lightly. Familiarity breeds contempt. That contempt is dangerous. Be very careful dealing with Vaishnavas. Otherwise, we'll make offenses, and offenses need to fall down. Now, another point here is that it said that by fate, by the influence of fate, the king drank the water. No one, you see, the Brahmins, they sanctified the water on the previous day, and then the next morning they were going to give to the king's wife. So they were all sleeping. They never thought this. They never thought someone would come in the night and drink the water. So it's just, well, it wasn't expected, but it happened. So, impelled by fate. Everyone is impelled, but what does fate mean? Fate means the fruition, the coming to fruition of our past activities. If you're killed, you will be killed. If you've done something good, you'll get some good result. And no one can tell how that will happen, but surely it will happen. Okay. Mostly in Kali Yuga, it's an age of misfortune. Mandabhagya is one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Everyone is unfortunate in so many ways. There's so many, just like you see so many plane accidents and Now they made the modern society with so many technological gadgets, but one of the results of this is there are so many accidents. So the electric shocks. It's very common. People die from it. Very common. Especially here in India, where the electricity is often not, it's not wired properly. It's a very common thing. The woman is ironing the clothes of the children before they go to school and going, saying, hurry up, come on, get your clothes, all of a sudden, dead. She touched the iron and it was short, so it was wrongly soldered, and electric shock, dead. Very common. Yeah. Actually, they say that there are more people die and have more accidents at home than on the road. The home is the most dangerous place. Because there are so many, there's lawnmowers, they have these electric lawnmowers, sometimes people trip over in the lawnmower comes and runs them off, kills them like that, or maims them, or they have different gas, the gas that explodes, the whole gas canister explodes, or they turn the gas on, and they don't light it, and they walk in the room and light, and then the whole room explodes. There's so many dangerous things, or they fall down the stairs, which is a very, very common thing. So it's very dangerous, danger at every step. And in Kali Yuga, everyone is mostly bad karma, because people are born, sin is the age in which those who are getting the results of sinful activities, they are born. So there's so much bad karma. Why? What is this bad karma? It means that in a previous life you did something bad. Now you're getting a bad result. And in Kali Yuga, all the people are born like that, with a vicious mentality. So everyone is being vicious to everybody else and giving everybody else their bad karma. That doesn't mean you should go and punch someone in the face and say that, well, you had some bad karma, so here you are. Here it is. You don't worry. You don't have to give it. It will come automatically. That Prahlad Maharaj explains. And Narayana also explains that you don't have to endeavor for happiness or distress. No one endeavors for distress. But it comes automatically. So he said that you don't also have to endeavor for happiness, because that will also come out of it. Distress and happiness, that means on the material platform, material distress is, it means things like having accidents, having no money, being cold, being too hot. These are different kinds of material distress. Material happiness means having sufficient money, having a nice wife, having prestige, position. These are considered the results of pious activities performed in previous lives. So you will get those results. Of course, maybe if someone has materially happy situation, he has money, nice wife, nice home, position, all these things, and still he's not happy. Just like this king, Yuvanashva, he was not happy. Because karma actually is mixed always. You see, he had wives, kingdom, presumably being Kshatriya. Kshatriyas are generally good-looking. So he had good looks, intelligent, but he was unhappy, like Chitraketu also, because he had no son. So karma is, it's not, you very rarely find someone with purely good karma, at least on this planet, because this planet is a planet where there's mixture. There's more of a mixture of good and bad. The hellish planets, you don't find anyone with good karma. There may be someone among the Narakvasis, the residents of hell, one of them is more good looking than the other. So as he's being beaten by the Yamakutas, you say, "You look, see, I have a very nice shaped nose, and you don't. You see, I'm better than you," as he's being beaten. So there may be some difference. It's not everyone's exactly the same. But basically in the hellish planets it's simply suffering. And in the heavenly planets it's enjoying. But even there, if you do something wrong, especially if you offend the brahmanas, you'll get some bad result. We find that Indra, he was enjoying happily in the heavenly planets. Then he offended his guru, Brihaspati, and immediately got the bad result. It happened more than once. One time he had to become a pig. So then they looked around and they found some nice king on the earth who's fit to take up the post of Indra. So they brought in this Nahush. All right, you be Indra temporarily, unless we need someone. to be the king.
So he also did the same thing. He insulted the Brahmanas. He became puffed up. He thought, I'm so great. And then he insulted the Brahmanas. And he also had to fall down. Immediately, he got up there by good activities and fell down. He had to become sleek. So, anyway, the point is that generally in Kali Yoga, is more bad fortune. And it's going to come. It will come to you automatically, especially in Kali Yoga. So much bad luck. Of course, the good luck you can get in Kali Yoga is to take part in the Sankirtan movement. But the point is that we are impelled. It comes to us, even if we don't look for it. Even if you think, I will be very safe. I will hide myself, I'll stay in my home and I won't go out and then I won't have any bad luck. Or often people think, I don't want to mix with anyone because two people, they harass me too much. But then they become completely miserable because they're lonely. There are so many stories you'll find in the Vedic literature that just like Kamsa, he thought that the eighth son of my sister will kill me. So let me kill all the children one by one. And just to make sure, let us kill all the children in the surrounding area. But he couldn't avoid. Krishna killed him. There are so many stories like this, where there's some prediction and they try to circumvent it, but they can't get around it. I was just reading this story of Oedipus, who was, anyway, it's a Greek mythological story. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Just the same thing. He was predicted that he would kill his own father. So his father put him out, put him on the edge of a mountain to die. But then he was found and he grew up and he got in a fight later on and he killed his father and other worse things too, which we didn't repeat here. You can't avoid. You cannot avoid your fate. And the same thing we find Yadu dynasty. Another story is that it was predicted that this lump of iron that Samba had hidden, pretending that he was a girl, a pregnant girl, what will this be, male or female? So they predicted this, what you have in your womb, your so-called womb, will cause the destruction of the whole dynasty. So Ugrasen said, grind it up, throw it in the sea. And again it washed in and became, from that, it mixed with the reeds, and the reeds became like iron bars, and the other dynasty all killed each other. So you cannot avoid your fate. That will come. You cannot avoid. Fate means, that is also a representation of Krishna, time. Kalos, what Krishna says in Gita. I am time. That is a representation of Krishna. Krishna is, time is the one of the impersonal representations of the Supreme Lord, within which all activities in the material world take place. You cannot avoid that. So time, by the influence of time, just sometimes happiness comes, sometimes distress comes, and you can't predict what will happen. Sometimes the situation seems very unfavorable, and then the time, the course of your karmic reaction changes and becomes favorable. We have so many stories. Rags to riches. Someone is born in poverty and they become rich. And we have riches to rags stories also. People are born in wealth and they die in poverty. That is the nature of this material world, always changing in the course of time. Kala pravaha. You can't say exactly what you can't say what will happen in the future. You may predict. There are so many predictions. A few years ago, so many predictions, there will be a great atomic war. And now no one's predicting like that anymore, because Russia, the Soviet Union fell to pieces, so they were predicting so many wars. And then I think it was you told me that this Bibi Raman, someone told me, Bibi Raman, the most famous astrologer in India, he's now, before they were saying all the astrologers were predicting there'll be a great war. They said, 1991, 1992, then 1993. It always goes back a little bit as the time goes forward and there's no war. And now they're saying that they don't expect any great war. But before they were all saying, that they expect a woman. Now they say they don't expect a woman. So I'm very great and strong. I can also predict. Maybe I by guesswork, I can be just as correct. Many times people come to me and they say, look at my hand. What do I say? I say, yeah, well, very bad. The only thing you can do is chant Hare Krishna. If you don't chant Hare Krishna, you're going to have a lot of problems. You're going to have repeated, lot of disease, and repeated old age, and you're going to have to die. Very bad. But if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll get liberated. See? We're also given predictions. But actually, it's very, very difficult to tell. Maybe a good astrologer, he can tell what will happen. But exactly what will happen in the future, even the best astrologer can never tell exactly what will happen. He can't say exactly what will happen. Especially for devotees, because devotees, they come under the control of Krishna. Under the control of Krishna means what is in their fate that may happen, but not in exactly the same way. Just like someone, a devotee, he may cut his thumb. So Prabhupada explained that for a devotee, he's only getting a token reaction of what reaction he was supposed to get. That may mean that he was supposed to be cut up into little pieces. But he's only getting a little. Actually, we have so much karmic reaction going ahead for many, many lives. And in the human life, if we're not Krishna conscious, we're making so much karmic reaction going ahead for many, many lives. At every moment, at every step, we're creating karmic reactions. So we have so much karmic reaction ahead. So a devotee, if any little thing happens, he can understand that actually Krishna is doing it, because the devotee is under the protection of the divine nature. He's no longer under Mahamaya. He's under Mahamaya, but the external energy is acting on him. We're in the world of Mahamaya. But Mahamaya doesn't work on the devotee in the same way as for a non-devotee. Mahamaya then works on the non-devotee to punish, and the idea of that punishment is that he can gradually, if he hears from devotees, he can gradually come to understand that this material life is miserable, I should get out of it. If a devotee has already heard about Krishna and taken shelter of Krishna, the material energy works in such a way as in that it is an impetus for him to get free from material life. Otherwise, the tendency is to become complacent. That's why we push the devotee, pushing movement from him. Push, go out on Sankirtan. Work hard. Do some service. Don't simply relax. Because if you relax, then you'll think, oh, everything is nice, you don't need to endeavor. Then you fall in mind. If you're busy in Krishna's service, then always keeps the consciousness sharp. If there is hearing and chanting going on side by side. So, Hare Krishna, up, Jarasa, is a side set, Dandavat. We may be becoming complacent. We may think, yes, now I'm a devotee and I'm already liberated. I've come here to save the fallen souls by my causeless mercy. Then we're becoming complacent. We get some kick from the material energy. We may not be chanting our rounds very attentively or taking very seriously, but when we get kicked from the material energy, we think, well, wait a minute, the material life's miserable. I better be more serious about Krishna consciousness. Or, again, thinking material life's miserable, well, I'm sad. See, I'm sorry, I've got a cut, I'm suffering. So I should try to help others come out from it. It's another way of thinking. Krishna describes in the Gita that a yogi, he empathizes with others' suffering by seeing his own suffering. But I have to suffer. And so many, I'm suffering, and see, I'm feeling this disease and so many bad things. But what about everybody else? They're also suffering. Let me do something to try to help them. So that's how fate works for a devotee, that he may still be getting his karmic reaction. Or it may act in a different way, just like he was supposed to get. Maybe if you say, well, How is it I'm getting a little cut? How can you say that's supposed to be... Actually, that's supposed to be cut up into little pieces. Because everyone gets little cuts here and there. So how can you say I'm supposed to be getting more severe reaction? The point is that your karma which is extending into millions of lifetimes. That's just you're getting a token in this lifetime. And that also just to propel us forward in Krishna consciousness. So you're getting that whole millions of lifetimes karma, some little representation in this lifetime. That's all. Now, this point that we can't avoid and we can't predict what will happen in future, we can't avoid reactions. So we may think, oh, that's it's really too bad. You're going to have to suffer so much. But time, the devotee sees Krishna in everything, and everything in Krishna. He sees Krishna also as time. So that may be very hopeful also. It's not that, well, I'm going to just simply have to suffer sinful reactions. But so many wonderful things may happen in due course of time also. Just like the Varaha avatar came as a tiny, tiny form of a hawk from the nose of Brahma. Then in course of time, became very big. Similarly, Matsya avatar. When the Satyavrata Muni, he was, you know, when people go to the river, they take the water and offer like this, while they're taking their bath. Take some water out, say some mantra, and offer again. Offering Ganga to them. So when he went like this, he found the fish. And the fish said, the fish started talking. It's not very common, fish start talking. He said, please protect me, otherwise the big fish will eat me. All right, I'll take you home. But then he took the fish home and put it in a little tank, and then the fish boom, became bigger. And this is too small. So, okay, I'll take you to a pond. Became as big as, take you to a lake. It just became bigger and bigger and bigger. So he couldn't predict that the little fish would become so big that he could only swim in the great ocean. He was, how it's described, he's some million yojanas long or something. That's another thing from the show, it didn't surprise me. It's immensely long. So you can't predict. When Prabhupada went to the Western countries, who could predict? No one could predict. Although nowadays we find people in India who said, actually it was me who sent your guru to the West. I told him. We find several people like this. It was my idea. It was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's idea. And no one sympathized with Prabhupada. They thought he's a fanciful old man or something. No one could predict. You see, he's just Abhai Baba. Some nice devotee. Devotee coming to the mat, plays nice bhajans, can speak, knows the philosophy nicely. There may have been so many people like that. And no one could predict. You see, there are so many sannyasis in Gauriyama. Some of them were preaching quite widely. None of them thought to go to the West. And he didn't have a lifetime with Saraswati Thakur. He just saw him a few times. And he wants to go to the West to preach. No one took him seriously. And even when he went to the West, you see, people saw him small. So Americans are all big people, like Balabhadra, not all of them, many of them. They're big, big. And Prabhupada, actually very short. Walking in a long coat in New York. And no one could imagine. Even the devotees who joined him, they couldn't imagine what happened in the future. You see, Prabhupada was in New York preaching, and he had a few followers around him. And then all of a sudden he went to San Francisco. And afterwards, Brahmananda, one of the first devotees, said, we never thought that this would go beyond the lower. We thought this little storefront, that was it. That is the Hare Krishna movement. We never thought it would go here. And this storefront is there in the Lower East Side, one area of New York. The hip people know about it. And that is the Hare Krishna movement. That's, you know, Swami Bhaktivedanta. That's it. You know, it's far out. Everything is there. It's far out. So, but it was far out. But it wasn't far out the Lower East Side. That was it. And then he went to San Francisco. You know, what's going on? What's he going to do in San Francisco? You know, this Hare Krishna movement is here. What's he going to do there? He had no idea how it could spread all over the world. And I must admit that I myself, I've been in preaching situations which are very, very difficult. And we're going on week after week, month after month, and no sign of it, much progress. And thinking, you know, what's the use? But in course of time, just by going on preaching, distributing books, even if it doesn't seem like anything's changing or anyone's becoming different. When I was first here in India, there was very few Indian people were actually joining our movement as full-time devotees. There were some, rather than others, let's say. But not many. Very few. Now so many are coming. We couldn't have... You see, in those days, there were very few temples of ISKCON in India also. All of South India, there was nothing. Then the Hyderabad temple came. Otherwise, there was nothing. So we couldn't imagine. Russia, I remember, I was in Russia. I went there in 1986. And I was thinking maybe there'll be a big war or something and then Russia will open up, or maybe after 50 years the political situation will change. But just a few years later everything changed and the whole situation opened up. Now there's thousands and thousands of devotees. No one could imagine at the time. So time, the representation of Krishna, you can't imagine how it will work. Krishna has his own way of working. The Pandavas, they were in the forest. Duryodhana had smashed them. They were finished to all appearances. They were the emperor. They had everything had been taken away from them. Their kingdom, they'd been shamed, insulted, they had no followers. Duryodhana had won. He had cheated. Whatever way he had taken over the position, they were finished. They were just wandering in the forest. And if in the 13th year they were to be found, then again, back 12 years, because Duryodhana thought that definitely within 1 year, you know, the Pandavas, they're such prominent people. Even if you look at them, they're so bright and lustrous. And just by looking at them, you can tell they're very special people. So with all his, he's the emperor, with all his spies, he's surely going to find the Pandavas within 1 year. If they're found out in 1 day, in 1 year, and again, back to the forest for 12 years. So their position was, they were smashed. Absolutely. From the external point of view, they were absolutely, Duryodhana was on top. He was the emperor, and there was nothing that was going to change them. But the Pandavas, there was another factor at play, which is that they were devotees of Krishna. And Krishna wanted them to be victorious. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanadhara, Tatra Shriya Vijaya Bhutya Dhuva Nityaya Matiya Mama. This is what Sanjaya told Dhritarashtra. Now the preparations for the war are there. Dharma Kshetri, Guru Kshetri, this is Dharma Kshetri, Guru Kshetri. And your sons, they are not dharmic, they are adharmic. So you better watch out. That's what he first told them. In the whole Bhagavad Gita, the last verse, where there is Krishna, where there is Arjuna, there is opulence, Tatra Shriya, Vijaya, complete victory. Tatra Shriya, Vijaya, Vijaya, Dhuvan, there is morality. Your sons are immoral. They cannot win the battle. So Dhritarashtra was worried. Before he's not worried. If the Pandavas are in the forest, let them be in the forest. We shall enjoy the kingdom. But then things changed. They came out from the forest. They came back and they wanted their throne. Even then it seemed there's no chance, because all the kings were under the Duryodhana. But Yudhishthira got some forces. Even then, his forces were much less than Duryodhana's. And all the best fighters, they were all on the side of Duryodhana. Arjuna was a great fighter, but nothing compared to Bhishma, Drona, even Ashwatthama, great fighter. When Yudhishthira was asking before the battle, he asked Ashwatthama, how can you be killed? He said, I cannot be. You will not kill me. And it was him. He didn't kill him. He couldn't kill him. So many great fighters were on the other side. But still, Dhritarashtra was worried. And Sanjay told him, you must be defeated. You cannot be victorious, because even though it seems that you're in the better position, You have the bigger forces, you have the best fighters. But Krishna is on the side of the Pandavas. What is that verse? Yesham Pakshe Janadana. Jayatas Pandavudranam. Yesham Pakshe Janadana. The Pandavas are always successful because Krishna is on their side. So that is the fact. It may not manifest immediately, but those who are on the side of Krishna, they are always victorious because Krishna is always victorious. Arjuna's name is Vijay. Krishna's name is also Vijay. Personified victory. So even though it may seem that the situation is very bad, hopeless, and there's no way forward, and what can we do? But if we simply keep our faith in Krishna, as the Pandavas did, they never gave up their faith in Krishna. They never blamed Krishna. They never thought, what's the use of being a devotee of Krishna? I was a devotee of Krishna and look what happened to me. They never said such a thing. They kept their faith in Krishna. And in due course of time, Krishna made the position of the Pandavas even greater than it had been before the battle. Even greater than before the battle means all their enemies were removed. Even before they went into exile. They were the kings, but they had so many enemies. And then after the battle, all their enemies were removed. And in the meantime, they gained so much glory and honor. So we don't know how Krishna will work. No one will know what will happen in the future. But the devotee has faith. This is faith that I am protected by Krishna. Krishna will surely protect me. That's Bhakti Rao Thakur. There's his disappearance. He sings. Avasya Rakhibe Krishna, Vishash Allah. The devotee's faith is there. Krishna will certainly protect me. How he will protect me, that's his business. I don't have to organize that. Just like a child is confident that the mother will protect, the parents will protect. He doesn't ask, well, how are you going to feed me? How are you going to protect me? He just, you know, they'll do it. Because they don't, the child doesn't go to the parents every day and say, our father, give us this day our daily bread. You'll say, what is that? Every day I'm giving you bread. Why are you so anxious? You think I'm not going to give you bread? The devotee, he just automatically accepts that surely Krishna will maintain me. If he wants to maintain me in opulence, very nice. If he wants to maintain me in poverty, very nice. And whatever, the devotee has the faith that whatever happens, it's all Krishna's will, and it's all meant for his plan, and I'm simply his servant, and I have to take my part in his plan. Sometimes some things are very difficult to understand, just like the same thing. The Pandavas, it must be very difficult for them to understand why Krishna, he was there personally present, why he treated them in such a bad way, why should that happen? Similarly, we may think, well, now here we are in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is Lord Chaitanya's movement, brought by Srila Prabhupada, for taking the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to the whole world. Then why are there so many problems, and why is it not just exactly utopia as we think it should be? Why this, why that? The Pandavas, they didn't say this. They simply went on serving Krishna. It was their duty to serve Krishna, just like there's that famous poem. How is this not to reason why? How is this but to do and die? Of course, people who said that were foolish, but that means they were. Well, this came up in the Crimean War. That's in Russia, right? The Crimea. In Russian, you must say it in a different way, but that's near Sevastopol, South Russia. So the British were there, and they had all their troops, cavalry, and there were two hills. And on the hills were the enemies, and I think they're Turks. And at the other side, in between the hills, at the end of the valley, was an enemy also. So the British were told to charge towards the enemy at the other end of the hills. Meanwhile, on the hills were all big cannons. So anyone, you know, you don't have to study military science to understand that if you charge between two hills, in which there are cannons, you're not going to reach the other side. You're going to be shot dead. You're going to be blasted to pieces before you reach the other side. But this poem celebrating the war heroes came out, beginning with, how is this not to reason why? How is this not to do that? You know,
The officer ordered us to charge. Wait a minute, there's cannons there. And okay. How is this not to reason? Why? How is this got to do and done? So they're all done. Maybe three people came back to tell the story. So a devotee, of course, the devotee is not simply foolish. He's not simply a complete idiot. That he just... Actually, there's a story like that also, that Bhaktisthan Sajar Thakur, one of his disciples, they were driving up to Darjeeling, which is a mountainous area. So when they stopped the car once, and they were at the side of the road, if you've driven also up to the Himalayas, you get out of the bus, and you just look ahead 1 meter, and you look down, and it's quite a long drop. 1,000 meters or more down to the next stopping place. So, Bhaktisthan Sajar Thakur said that, if I tell you to jump, will you jump? He said, yes. Why? He said, I know if you order me to jump, then you will also protect me. So that's the faith of the devotee. Of course, the devotee is not foolish. He uses his intelligence also, that Krishna gives him how to act. But his basic faith is there. That we simply have to serve Krishna, and Krishna will look after us. Ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do, and not die, but live forever, go back to Godhead. The materialist, that's a fact. He simply acts his life and he dies. The devotee acts his life in the service of Krishna. He knows that whatever happens, even if everything is miserable, I have to serve Krishna, and at the end I'll go back to him. Krishna will protect me. He may take me back to Godhead. May not, but anyway he'll look after me. And even if it's Krishna's will that I won't go back to Godhead now and have to suffer in so many ways, the devotee, he's ready to accept that. And because of that move, Krishna takes him back to Godhead. Because he has that move. Tathena kampam su samichamano vunjana nivapa kitam vivakam vidvagam vivaratandam asteji vete yo mukti vadesadaya. Daya. Inheritance, rightful inheritance. One who goes on serving Krishna, despite all inconveniences and difficulties, and simply thinks, well, I'm getting the result of my simple activities, let me go and serve Krishna. And Krishna becomes so much pleased by that attitude that he takes the devotee back to Godhead. Guaranteed to go back to Godhead. For someone who's always trying to adjust the circumstances, that, well, I don't like this circumstance, so let me change. That's what the materialists are doing. They spend their, what are the materialistic people doing? They spend their whole life trying to adjust the circumstances and trying to make things better. The good life, they advertise in America. The good life. That means everything's nice and, you see, nice cars. Nice homes. One devotee wrote to me that he said the common rice in India is better than the good rice in America. He was living in India, Krishnakirti, he went back to America. So I wrote back to him and said, yes, and the ordinary life in India is better than the good life in America. Even though the Indians, they're trying their best to make everything, including the rice, just the same as America. So even their rice is better, but they'll have to introduce American-style rice because it's America. So the good life, you see, in America they have so much arrangement for the good life. The good life means, what would you say? It means to have enough money and friends and facilities for enjoyment. It's called the good life. Parties. Sri Aishwarya Prajipcha. What is that in Bhagavatam? That's the good life is described. Sri Aishwarya Prajipsa means to have beautiful women, money, and family members. This is considered the good life. But you make so many arrangements for the good life, but still you're miserable. That's the fact. Still you're miserable. So many times I've said this. Every time I say it in India, people look at me with disbelief that people are not happy in America. They can't believe it. How can you not be happy? You have money, and you have a powerful army, and you have Bill Gates is an American, and Bill Clinton's an American, and you know, Mickey Mouse is an American, so, I mean, everything, all
all the great people come from America, so you must be happy living in America. But actually, it's not true. Believe it or not, it's not a fact. Happiness doesn't come from enjoying the results of good karma or trying to negate the results of bad karma. Happiness comes from surrender to Krishna. That is the secret. Devotee understands that. Therefore, he doesn't doesn't make elaborate plans to change the circumstances that he's in, but rather, whatever the circumstances are, he serves Krishna. And if things go wrong, he goes on serving Krishna. He knows that, of course, if things go wrong, he's not foolish that simply, alright, the water is running from the tap, so let it run, the whole house floods. Not that, you know, let it be. Don't try to change anything. Everything is some kind of personalistic idea. That just, whatever is there, just accept it. Everything's wonderful. Everything's nice. Everything's good.